It's 5:06 and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new report from the World Health Organization shows that one person around the world dies every 10 seconds from alcohol-related causes.
First, for many American families today, being middle class, usually the mark of stability, can mean living close to the financial edge. With stalling wages and mounting expenses, living paycheck to paycheck is part of the new experience of life in the middle class for some people.
But how is Wisconsin faring, and how are you doing? According to our guest, national trends suggest rising income insecurity is tied to getting and keeping a good-paying job and paying for high-quality goods and services. We want to hear from you. Are you feeling less financially secure? Does being in the middle class mean you have a solid financial footing for your family? Or are you living paycheck to paycheck, even with one or even two good-paying jobs? Call in, share your story, your experience at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Joseph Cohen joins us now. He's assistant professor of sociology at Queens College in City University of New York. Joseph, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Joe, what are you seeing when you look at the issue of income insecurity in the middle class?
Well, it looks like over the past 30 years, there's been a long-term decrease in financial security, and we can see it in a lot of ways. In the early 1980s and during the 1970s, people saved maybe 10 to 13% of their take-home pay. That's dropped by half. It got down to 1% right before the crisis. People have very little money in their bank accounts and are unable to deal with, a financial emergency, a big bill, a medical emergency. They're deeply in debt. Bankruptcy had been rising steadily, and people are desperately undersaved for retirement.
And when we talk about families who seem to be solidly in the middle class, maybe you've got a couple each making about $45,000 a year, and that's what financial stability would seem to indicate financial stability. What does it look like now on an income like that?
Well, you mean for $90,000 total?
Right, as an example of a couple who seems to be doing pretty well, pulling in decent money, are they able to hit some of the benchmarks of stability that we might have expected in the past?
It is possible. The main problem is that there are certain sort of well-being essential goods and services that are very, very expensive. And if, for example, college or housing in a high-performing school district or maybe a non-distressed school district, childcare, things like that. Families, even families with good incomes, $90,000 will probably go a long way. But somebody who's maybe earning 50, 75, maybe around the median to the 75th percentile, can have trouble. People have to give up something. Do you want to live in a good school district? Do you want to pay for your child's college? Do you want to retire and not want to rely on Social Security exclusively?
So what kinds of things would you expect people to be able to do if they were income secure?
If they were income secure, for example, well, you can take a look at what happens in other highly developed countries like in Europe or Canada. A medical event might not push them over the financial precipice into bankruptcy, or college might be affordable enough that a young person doesn't have a home mortgage worth of debt before they even start earning. There are certain things that can wipe a family out, and the problem's compounded by the fact that people have very little cash on hand. They have a quarter of the country has about $500 in the bank, which is about two tire blowouts could wipe them out, and about 60% have less than $3,000 a medical bill. And that pushes people to assume debt or maybe liquidate assets if they run into a temporary job loss, a sickness, a major home repair.
I'm wondering about the expectations that people have for the middle class now. A generation ago, you might have expected that one partner could stay at home, raise the children if there were any. There would be enough for summer vacations and maybe a little vacation house somewhere if it was somewhere modest. Is that the same sort of thing people expect today?
I think people expect it. Well, in a way they expect it, and in a way they don't. There's some indication that people's expectations of their lifestyle or overall well-being is actually diminishing. People are beginning to expect that they'll be poorer in the future. And your question touches on maybe a core issue when we're talking about whether or not people are financially secure, because The truth is it's possible to literally survive easily on $90,000. It's possible to literally survive on $15,000 per year without outside help. But that means getting a basic number of calories, remaining clothed, and living indoors. When we talk about economic security or financial stability, we're asking how much money do you need to maintain what you'd consider a reasonable basic standard of living, given that we live in a very rich country in the year 2014? So do you need preventative medical care? Some people do without that. Do you need to live in a city whose murder rates aren't comparable to a major Brazilian or Mexican city? A lot of Americans live in that type of community. Do you need your children to go to a school district that would be considered average by, Hungarian, Polish, or Slovakian standards? Forget about Canada, Britain, or Sweden. So the question is how much people feel they need, and in other countries, things like preventative medical care or affordable college or even childcare are considered rights or things that, it's undisputable that everybody in society needs them. And so they're provided at a heavily subsidized cost or in some situations, no cost. And the problem is in the United States, there's a large out-of-pocket burden. So if you run out of money, you run a risk of having to forego something that you really need, like a medical procedure. Or you might have to settle for sending your child to a distressed school district that would be right at the bottom of global rankings.
Well, and not every state is being affected in the same way. Not every city. In some of the states with the worst income instability for the middle class, what are we seeing there?
Well, poverty is very, very high. There's all sorts of different problems going on in different parts of the country. So, there are certain parts, certain states, and certain communities where people are desperately poor, and they are living, I'd say, a material standard of living that, when foreigners look at it, they might consider it to be intolerable or unacceptable. Wisconsin, apparently, I was looking into the data in anticipation of this interview, and it appears that Wisconsin is actually nationally one of the better places to stay afloat. So the pressures that face a lot of Americans might not be felt as hard by people in Wisconsin.
And what do you attribute that to?
Well, it's hard to say. I'm not an expert on what happens in Wisconsin. I know it appears that housing is very, very affordable, and that's a pressure that people in the coastal states don't have to contend with. And housing is one of the four major drains on people's budgets. The others are healthcare, education, and transportation costs. There are plenty of places where housing is cheap, but there are no jobs. And Wisconsin seems to be doing okay in that respect. Its wages are around the national average, even though it has low housing values. And that's probably a big factor. The other thing is, it looks like just from the data that the public transportation system isn't too bad either. There's very few people who appear to be left unconnected by the system, and transportation can be a problem.
Well, let's talk about income stagnation for a moment. Wage stagnation, is that a national trend? Because if so, would that be affecting people here in Wisconsin as well? Given that in a field of their peers, Wisconsin might look pretty good.
Right. Well, that's it. It's good. It's good for America. For international standards, I don't know. But the truth is that people all over the world have to deal with some type of pressure, and a lot of it has to do with globalization and technology. Those are international pressures that everybody and everywhere is having to contend with. In the United States, there are some other sort of factors that compound those two difficulties. So the social safety net is a little bit thinner. Taxes don't redistribute as much wealth as in other countries. The social policy doesn't really buffer people in the same way that it would, in Northern Europe or to some degree even in Canada or Britain.
Well, we're talking right now about income insecurity in the middle class and taking a snapshot of what middle class living looks like here in Wisconsin. Our guest is Joseph Cohen, assistant professor of sociology at Queens College in the City University of New York. We're talking about income insecurity in the middle class and trying to get a sense of what it feels like here in Wisconsin. Are you feeling a middle class squeeze, which has been the national trend? Are you foregoing things, maybe preventative health care, those tires on the car, that kind of thing? Or do you feel like, as someone in the middle class, you're doing pretty well here in Wisconsin?
You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your stories. Do you feel economically insecure? What's driving that? What would it take to make you feel like you're on solid ground again? Or for the first time ever, maybe. Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or share your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we've got a comment here. Marsha on Facebook says, "My husband is a full-time teacher. I'm only able to work part-time. We're definitely feeling the squeeze due to his union being rendered impotent. Health insurance became more expensive 2 years ago, and our deductible went up. Our copay doubled this year. We eat out much less often than we did 4 years ago. We rarely buy clothes brand new anymore. And while I never used to check prices at the supermarket, I now absolutely must." That from Marsha. And Joe, what does that say to you about how Wisconsin, or at least some people, are faring right now?
Well, that experience it seems quite typical. We often think of people who are experiencing financial distresses, imprudent spenders, just sort of consumerists who buy things that they don't need and generally waste their money. But the data shows that over the past 30 years, Americans have been spending less money on, you know, groceries, on restaurants, on clothing, and things like that. It's those four big areas: education, which includes childcare, healthcare, housing, and transportation costs that are putting the squeeze on people. And housing is a particularly burdensome cost, and is really the source of people's debt. And there's an interesting sort of aspect of America, how America organizes its school system. For example, in Ontario, where I'm from, people pay taxes to the province, and then the province distributes money on a reasonably equitable per student basis, and they give supplemental funding to poor neighborhoods. And what that means is that you can live below your means. There's no sort of educational penalty to living in a poor neighborhood. The problem in a lot of U.S. states is that schools are funded locally, and so the ability to get a foothold in one of those well-heeled neighborhoods means that you can send your kid to a school that's well-funded. And those well-heeled neighborhoods tend to restrict the development of high-density housing that could, a place that people of more modest means could afford, or that the middle class could just sort of downgrade their lifestyle, spend below their means, and live there. A good example of that, I was looking at educational scores I don't have firsthand experience with Wisconsin, but for example, in Milwaukee, in downtown Milwaukee, there's very, very inexpensive housing, and the school system performs very low relative to other highly developed countries, including poor ones like in Eastern Europe. Whereas if you go to the western suburbs of Milwaukee, like Pewaukee and places like that, you get world-class schools, but the housing is four or five times more expensive, and it's less densely populated.
So there are these trade-offs that are happening there. Let's go to the phones right now. We've got Jim joining us now in Fontana. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you think?
I'd like to speak a little bit from the point of view of a senior citizen, and my wife is retired. I'm still working. In terms of dropping the middle class, of course we're dropping the middle class. I went to the University of Illinois in the 60s for $135 a semester tuition, so I got a great start. But I'm kind of wondering, we seem so obsessed with the middle class. For instance, if you're making a little bit more money and you're kind of back in the upper middle class, you feel good driving to a little better restaurant that you can now afford through a neighborhood where people are really suffering. There's a mean, you're in the solid middle class, you get to have one or two speedboats instead of one. I'd like to see us take care of each other, you know, get housing taken care of, good education, good health care. And then we really need so much stuff. We really doesn't matter where in the middle class we are. How about the idea of community and a and a society that's healthy all the way through, top to bottom. That would be my comment.
Gotcha, Jim. Thank you for that. And Jim's saying maybe spread the bounty a little bit among the middle class and have people helping out each other, and probably society-wide, I'm guessing he's saying. What do you think about that sort of idea, Joseph?
Well, you know, I know it's sort of a contentious, the idea of redistribution or spending the wealth, spreading the wealth. It's politically a hot button issue. I would say that in other highly developed countries, at the very least, we can ensure that people can get sort of the very basics, things that they need to stay healthy, physically secure, and economically viable. If we could just make those things inexpensive, I think that would take a lot of the burden off of people's need to accumulate so much money. My impression, I've been in America 14 years now, and from the outside, it's often thought that there's a money-oriented culture. But I find that Americans are not like that at all. It's that you need a lot of money to ensure that if you lose your job, you can still make COBRA payments and cover the doctor. Or if you have a child who you want to go to college, you can make sure that they don't start life out in a mountain of debt. And if we could just eliminate sort of those basic well-being financial obligations and make it a matter of a nice restaurant or, you know, things like that, I think that all Americans' standards of living would be higher.
Well, thanks a lot for the call, Jim. And we're going to move next to Nick in Hudson. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I was listening to this on the radio, and I heard about the middle class. And being someone who's grown up in the middle class for pretty much his whole life, I see that one of the biggest issues is now I'm in college now, and in order to get in and stay into the middle class, you need to get a college degree. And we're seeing, especially in the state of Wisconsin, we're seeing rising tuition costs. And while the tuition freeze in the past years has helped us out, it's also hurting some of the schools because we're seeing the ones that did budget effectively didn't have problems with this large surplus of money are not able to keep the good teachers because we just simply don't have the money. We don't have the students. And I think that if we really want to keep the middle class, we should keep working towards this idea of having a state-based education, and maybe we can get jobs that would promote middle class, keep the middle class going in Wisconsin.
All right. Thanks a lot, Nick. Thanks for your thoughts. And Joe, getting at the place college has in all this. Now, it used to be college was your ticket out of poverty, if you were in poverty, into the middle class. And where does that stand now?
The returns to college appear to be diminishing over the long term. So it is losing its cachet and, in effect, almost becoming the new high school, at least over the long term. Still, a lot of people don't go to college, and there are definite benefits to doing it. It's just that the advantage is eroding. And even public education here is very, very expensive. I think it's about $9,000 at the University of Wisconsin. At the University of Toronto, be about $6,000. And in Europe, there's many countries like the French and the Dutch have a tuition-free college. It's treated just the way high school is or elementary school is.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for that call, Nick. And just where do you see this going in terms of the income insecurity for the middle class? This has been sort of a big talking point for both political parties as we head into the election season, into the midterms, talking about the middle class and where they are now. But where do you see the wind blowing?
Well, there are some bright spots, and there's also some degree of hopelessness on my part, or maybe skepticism. There are certain things. I believe that the Affordable Care Act has the possibility of defraying some of the health care costs, but it's hard to envision getting down to the point where people don't have to worry about medical bills like they do in other places. College continues to be more expensive, and it's not altogether clear why it's becoming more expensive, but that's spiraling out of control. And it's very difficult to envision a situation in which sort of the well-heeled neighborhoods would be opening their doors to more affordable housing or, you know, more school integration. It just seems that people have too much to lose. And part of the problem is that I get the sense that everybody's desperate in some way. Everybody wants to hold on to whatever sliver of security they have or whatever sliver of advantage that they can retain so that their children can hopefully stay above water in a future that's undoubtedly going to be more and more competitive and tougher to survive. So I'm skeptical that there'd be changes that would ease these pressures. But who knows?
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. Joe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
We've been talking to Joseph Cohen, Assistant Professor of Sociology at Queens College in the City University of New York.